Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Ithaca. Explore Ithaca's waterfalls, orchards, and craft beverage scene. Plan your getaway at visitithaca.com.
You're listening to Item 13, an African food podcast, and I'm your host, Yom Akuaku. Every week, we'll delve into the delicious world of African food, including chefs, curators, and bloggers. Here's the show. It's another edition of Item 13, and this week in the guest chair, we have Efwa AC of Buswo Foods. Inspired by her daughters, Ifwa started a bottled beverage business featuring herbal teas from across the continent. Starting with the Roselle hibiscus tea, popularly known in Francophone West Africa as Bissau, the idea is to craft and produce delicious and low-caloric ready-to-drink teas that are void of artificial preservatives and ingredients. Welcome to the show, Ifwa.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to chat. And we're talking offline about some things that I'm excited to include in this conversation for the benefit of our audience. So thanks for joining. I want to start with your story. So tell us a little bit about Efwa. Where did you grow up and sort of how did you end up where you are today and then specifically ending up in food? I know that's a lot packed in one question, but I wanted to give you the freedom to go in whatever direction you'd like in terms of
answering. Sure. Thank you again for having me. So I am originally from Ghana. I immigrated here for college. I currently work in finance. And the idea for Buswo actually came up. It was inspired, as you said, by my daughters. And that was because, so it's a couple of things that came together, right? It's a little bit not traditional. So I was enrolled in Baruch College at the time, mm-hmm. and we had a club, an African club, and we had this event called Taste of Africa, mm-hmm. and always served Bissap, right? Mm-hmm. So I learned how to make it from there and then I'll make it at home. And so it became like a household thing. And then I also had friends from Senegal, Mali, et cetera, like, you know, friends from the club who would visit and then they would also make Bissap. Eventually it became something like it became pervasive in households and community gatherings, et cetera. So on one particular day, one of my daughters was like, is there any reason why we don't see these in stores? And to be honest with you, I had also asked that question. But it's one of those things where you're like, yeah, I mean, it would be lovely to see it in stores, but that's not someone else's problem, right? It's not like I don't see myself actually taking on that mm-hmm. mantle to make it happen. And each time that I made it, they would actually say, Mom, this is actually good. You know, this is something that is in our culture, be it West African or Ghanaian. So maybe we should try to see if we can get it in stores.
How old were your kids when they were telling you this?
This was 7 years ago. So they were like 9 and 10.
Wow.
Actually eight and like 10. Around, no, 5 years ago, so 8 and 10, sort of, right? Yeah. So they were like, this would be really nice to have it in stores. And then another thing that inspired me was the one in their curriculum, they have this exercise, I am from. It's a poetry. You have to write a poem of I am from, and you just take day-to-day things, right? So you can go, like my daughter's, one of her stories was, you know, I am from Netflix on the weekends, like day-to-day things that you do.
Right. After.
And then when I read hers, I think she was in grade six at that time. When I read one of hers, she was like, I am from waking up to the smell of hibiscus from the kitchen, from mom. Exactly. So I thought, wow, these girls are serious. Mm. Okay, so let me look into it. So I started looking into what are we going to call this, right? Mm. We sit up and when you kind of like talk to everyone, it's like a juice. But I'm looking at the thing, it's not necessarily a juice. So it's a tisane. And I may go off course here, so just feel free to bring me back.
What?
So it's like a tisane, like an herbal tea, it's an infusion, right? So... And then I was like, okay, that's true, but is there a market for it, right? What is, and at that time, I'm trying to make the math, maybe it was more like 7-8 years ago. So they were much younger because at that time we hadn't, right now it's different where we actually have some of these products on market, right? So we have the Jinjin Brothers, we have, exactly. So, and at that time, I don't think we had that much. So when I was looking into the market, when you think about herbal tea, a lot of it was loose leaf, right? So if you look at Roselle, if you look at chamomile, whatever the case may be, lavender, whatever, ginger, it was all loose or dried. You don't necessarily have it already packaged, coming to you ready to drink. So there was that white space there. So I thought, okay, so there may be something there. And then again, you have to go to how do you market this, and we can get into that, and how do you make it on a commercial scale, etc. But in the end, that is what inspired me, right? So introducing it through that club, making it, visiting families and visiting friends and family, everybody making it. Right now, it's a staple at most Ghanaian. I can only speak like from Ghana, but I'm sure it's other. It's a staple in most Ghanaian parties, right? If there's no ginger and sobolo, you didn't have a party. More or less. Right, exactly, more or less. So, I thought, okay, how am I, but what's my story in terms of what is the value proposition here? And it was difficult at that time because there was no yardstick to go by. Right. It was really what it is that you want to do. I did do my research and I realized that many, even before when I was thinking about it, there was another one called Adina Beverages and she's from Senegal. I forget. I think her name is Margaret Wad. I hope I'm pronouncing it well. Wad or Wade is W-A-D, Wad or Wade. And she was the one who actually started it. And then I think she sold it to Naked Juice. So I was like, okay, there's really no one that you can really look into. So I just started my research and trying to find out what can be done, et cetera. And here we are today. Long-winded, but here we are.
No. We will unpack that and get into the details. Because I knew that this was inspired by your kids. And I think you told me this story a few years ago, but it's just... I think I didn't appreciate like how young they were when they sort of started to plant these seeds with you. And we were talking offline before we came on air about, so we were having a side conversation about the podcast's audience and a light bulb moment that I had that you sharing is that this podcast also could be helpful for the next generation, right? And it's not something that I had thought about in terms of like first generation African kids who are in the diaspora and who are looking to connect to their culture through food. Mm-hmm. And for those of you who listen to every episode and are listening in sequence, last week I spoke to Samantha Cote, who runs Auntie's Ice Cream. And, you know, and a part of the conversation we had was how him, so she's also first gen Ghanaian. And part of the conversation we had was how she grew up in Houston, but her mom replicated, as she was describing, like her weekends and how she spent them with her mom. Mm-hmm. For me, that was also a light bulb moment because it completely, and in a different way, completely replicated what my experience with my mom was in the weekends, right? So for her in Houston, on the weekends, Friday, her mom would pick her up. They would go to the local ethnic store, pick up all their ingredients, go to the fish market, get fish, and then all day Saturday they're cooking, doing this. So that's how she grew up, and she knew nothing else, right? And for me, I remember going to Makola Okaneishi with my mom, same sort of thing. So like what you said this morning, for me, just like all sorts of light bulbs going on. One about passing, remembering to pass on culture, and how potentially this podcast can help do that for our kids, which I had thought about. So our kids can be powerful instigators of what sort of legacy we can leave for them moving forward. Okay, so that's my digression, but back to the matter at hand. I want to go back. So why Boso? For those that don't know, we have a very diverse audience from around the world. Can you explain like the name, how you landed on the name Boso?
So Boso was borrowed from the Chi phrase Anopa Boso, which means morning dew. So I just dropped the Anopa, which is morning, and then Boso is dew. So when I was thinking about starting the company, I was like, what is it going to be called? I didn't want anything with my name in it. And I wanted something where it was pieced together in a way culturally, right? So I wanted, if my background was Ghana, I wanted something from Ghana in there. So, you know, we have different names. So I'm going to digress a bit. We have different names for the result hibiscus, right? So Ghana is Sobolo. I didn't think I was going to call it Sobolo. Like, you know, my bottles are 8 ounce bottles. It was hard enough to fit Boso and Bisap on it. So I knew I was going to go with Bisap. But then I also needed my Ghanaian connection. So I decided that it was going to be a chi. It would be chi, because sometimes that's also a conversation starter, right? What is Boso? Where does it come from? What's the origin? So now you understand a little bit from Ghana, or you know a Ghanaian word. And I chose Boso because of the significance, like, you know, refresh. You know, what does Boso do? It refreshes, exactly. And it rejuvenates and it renews, right? In terms of what morning dew does, right? And, you know, it's more like harvest, you know. I think there's a biblical, don't quote me on it, but I think there's also a biblical connotation to it, where it's more like, just to that extent, harvest, you know, abundance, etc., refresh and rejuvenation. So I chose that. That's how the name Boso came about, because I knew I was going to go with Bisap, which is mainly from Francophone West Africa. So I also needed the Ghanaian connection, which is where I'm from, and so I chose Boso.
I really like that word.
Yeah.
And then one of the things that you also mentioned up top that I wanted to sort of delve in and maybe educate people a little bit on was your from your learning, your research, your aha moment that this is not juice, but it's tea. Because it was, and I don't know if you remember this, but like when we met, you know, a few years ago, like that for me was one big sort of realization. I was like, oh, actually, you're right. Like it's leaves that are steeped in, you know, what basically, essentially, because like, if you ask me, I would say Sobolo is a juice, right? It's a juice that we have at events and whatnot. So can you dive a little bit into that and then talk about your research in terms of like, because you also distinguish between it being an herbal tea versus like a traditional tea plant, right?
So that's where, so that's where I started my research from, in terms of, you know how when we cook, we just cook. There's no way I have a recipe for anything I cook. You just put it together. I just tell you the ingredients and you put it together, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And that's okay. That's also the beauty of how we do things. But at some point, if we're going to commercialize things, we really need to understand how we are, what the nomenclature is, right? How we are communicating it to people. Just so, because again, like I said, if we're going to do this and for the next generation to come, we actually have to explain the authenticity, what used to be done traditionally and what we're actually innovating, and how what we have traditionally and how to communicate that in today's world, right? So those are some of the things that I thought about. Like anybody I asked, they were like, oh, it's a juice. Right. So I realized that the recipe is such that it is a flour, if you will. Mm-hmm. And then that's the base. And of course, others add juices. They, you can add ginger, you can add pineapple,
right.
whatever it is, maybe. So yes, it would have probably some juices mixed in there, but the base itself is an actual tea. Mm-hmm. But again, it's an herbal tea because what we actually call tea is the traditional tea leaves, which is Camellia sinensis, right? I think that's the scientific name.
Dropping.
Yeah, so that's what true tea is. And it comes in black, white, green, right? And I think there's another one, per. I'm not pronouncing it well, but it starts with a P. And it's all based on the oxidization levels and the fermentation levels. So that's what actual tea is, mm-hmm. right? Everything else outside of that is not a tea. We can call it that, but it's not a tea. It's an herbal tea, and they're basically infusion.
Oh,
so we call those tisanes. So they're different types of tisanes. So they're like root tisanes, flower tisanes, which is where Roselle will fall into. Mm-hmm. Root tisanes. So it's basically infusing it, however you produce it. So I don't know how far back I can go, or like, you know, how much you've, like, your experience in Ghana. And I'm also very wary on making sure that my experience in Ghana is not necessarily everybody's experience in Ghana. But, you know, like when you're sick sometimes in the olden days, now I'm like olden days, like I'm you know, you can cut the bark of a tree. I'm not exactly sure what bark it is, but I've seen, like, you know, my grandmothers, my grand aunts, you're sick and you have a fever, they'll go cut some barks and some leaves and then they'll cook it together. Those are like root barks, right? Mm-hmm. And they're bitter, but they, whatever it is, whatever ailment is gone within like a day or two.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So all of those are tisane. So Roselle will fall under the flower tisane, right? So they're like lavender, rose petals, all of that will fall under the tisane, or to make it easy, an herbal tea.
Wow.
So that's what I found out. Exactly. So that's what I found out. And then I also had to make sure that what we're calling hibiscus, because it's easy to just call it hibiscus.
Right.
Some others also do the regular traditional hibiscus, but ours, which we also share with the Caribbeans, is the Roselle tea. So that is the sorrel. And that is our bisap and sobolo. So I had to make that distinction. And in fact, I had to make that distinction also on my branding. Because if you look at my very, very first bottles, I had the traditional hibiscus on there because it was easy.
Yeah.
But I came back and I said, you know what? It might be easy, but it's actually, you're miscommunicating. So it's best to actually do it right. So now I had to fish and go find the actual Roselle, see how it will fit on the bottle. And I made that change somewhere along the line.
That's a good segue actually to what I wanted to talk about next, which is like the product line. And then also just, and I've told you this several times before, your product photography and overall design is just out of this world. And I've always appreciated it, but now I have even more respect for it. Now that I'm working in a marketing org and I understand how much thought and effort goes into thinking about design elements, even from a product photography perspective. So, like, first of all, as a solo entrepreneur, I have a lot of respect for you for that, because even in, you know, billion-dollar organizations, it's a lot to do. So definitely appreciate that. So one, I wanted to start with your product line. You talked about the red Roselle that you use, and I think your primary product right now is the Bisap Rouge. Yes. Can you share with us a little bit about that? You know,
right. So the idea, and that is still the idea, I just have to think about the perfect execution for it, because sometimes as an entrepreneur, you get lost in your own mind and going back and forth. But the idea here was to start with the Bisap. And if you remember, I actually started with two flavors, white sorrel, exactly, and the red sorrel. And I can come into the story of how the white is a little bit shelved. It's going to come back, but it just speaks or informs, again, these high barriers of entry, also, you know, the capital requirements in actually getting these businesses running. So for me, the idea was to actually feature herbal teas from around the continent. Oh, so nice. There's just so many that we can go into. There's lemongrass, there's rooibos.
All right. Ooh, lemongrass.
Exactly. And then with ginger, that's also very interesting. Ginger, you can actually do it as a real juice where you blend the juice up, mm-hmm. or you can actually have it at the tea where you actually boil it and then you make it into, again, an infusion, right? So so those are the things that I'm thinking about. And ultimately, I'm going to bring it together, even if it takes me 20 years. It's something that doesn't leave me. You know how you abandon an idea, but it doesn't escape. It's always in the back of your mind. It comes back all the time. Yes. So because I had put this idea of Boso behind, I'm like, listen, you have no business. Personally, I was going through so much. I was like, you have no business. Mm-hmm. And eventually it was actually revealed that I actually didn't have any business starting this type of business. But I still persevered. Somehow it still came up and I found a way to make it. So to answer your question, that is the overall idea of Boso, right? Bottled, CPG, ready to drink teas from the continent. Low caloric, no artificial preservatives, no artificial sweetness. That's just what it is. Authentic methods of preparation, which I will come back to if we happen to talk about co-packers and stuff, I can come back to what it is authentic and then mass producing and
commercial. Right. Yeah.
But in a nutshell, that is where I'm going with this. Talking about the white bisap, maybe it's time, maybe it's not time, but I'll touch on that.
Sure.
It is less popular than the red. So the supply chain was very...
Oh, I see. Supply chain, yeah.
Exactly. So a classic example is when you're working with a co-packer, they need a lot number. And this is not a way to just bash our supply chain, but it's just that it's not existent. And even when it's existent, it's not up to par in terms of, so if somebody's listening and they want to do that and make the producer's life easy, I'm sure we welcome it. So like the white bisap, right? Or even the red bisap, I've had to, and I think we should talk about this. I've had to actually veer from buying it, let's say from the Bronx or Harlem, because it didn't have a lot number. It just had an expiration date. And the co-packer is like, I need my lot number because they also have regulations to go according to, right?
Yeah.
And I need the certification that comes with the product, right? The product certification, when it was harvested, what pathogens are in there, what this, what that. So all of that, because Roselle is more popular, I could find herbal companies that could do it. Some in California, Massachusetts, Boston, whatever, that eventually I had to go from. Because when I was doing samples, I'll go to my local store, that's fine.
Yeah.
But then when I want to produce it commercially, I just can't bring that, you know? They did it for the sample run, but they're like, once we start this and it's official, we're actually going to need these requirements. So for the white one, what I actually had to do was get the sample from the local store, take it to the lab, have the lab, you know, assess it, come up with the report before I could go to the co-packer. That's a cost with time, with money, resources, etc. You see? So it got to a point. And then when you look at the price point, it was hard enough, you know, with the high entry barriers, it was hard enough. So I just said, you know what, I may have to shelve this for a little bit, but I'm going to bring it back. I'm going to figure out how to do this. If it means finding more funding or, you know, doing it myself, because I've done it in terms of finding a lab, taking it there, getting it certified, get a lot number, bring it back, all that stuff. It's just an additional two or three steps in the production process. But if that's what it is, then that's what it is. It's just that I don't have that capacity to do that right now.
Yeah.
So I forget the question.
Actually, I think we're at a good point to take a break.
Okay.
And then when we come back, we'll chat more about the business of bringing a product to market and then some of the lessons you've actually started to share that you learned along the way. So you're listening to Item 13 and we will be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Ithaca. helping you to plan your next getaway. Ithaca has waterfalls and wineries, art and theater, outdoor recreation, and family fun. The area is famous for its glacier-carved gorges, co-op-run businesses, and cultural influences from Cornell University and Ithaca College. The area is well known for its local cideries, which are leading the way in America's cider revival. You can hear from the region's cider makers directly on HRN's series Hardcore. There is something really special about Ithaca's climate for cultivating delicious apples steeped in history and terroir. The second season of Hardcore is out now. You can learn all about apples and fermentation and dive into how cider makers and their communities are working to create an equitable industry and one that is resilient to climate change. Listen to Hardcore on your favorite podcast app.
HRN is home to transformative exchanges about food. We hope our diverse lineup of shows opens your eyes, educates, and empowers.
I spent 7 years working in the restaurant and bar industry, in front of house and back of house. And I just feel like Heritage Radio Network's content helps me feel so well connected to the other creators and chefs and restaurateurs and all the amazing things that they're doing. I still feel like I get to be a part of the kind of in team.
Join us during our summer membership drive by donating and becoming a member. Members play an essential role in keeping nonprofit food radio on the air. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member today. We thank you for your support.
Okay, so back from the break, and before the break, we're chatting about the sap root, and you started to talk about some of the challenges you had with the white Roselle, and having to sunset that for, or pause on that for a little bit. And that's kind of what I wanted to chat on in this next segment, was around some of the challenges and then lessons you've learned along the way in terms of doing this. So I want us to take a step back and want people to understand from a step-by-step basis, especially for people that are listening and want to start something, right? Like, they've listened to your story so far, I'm like, ooh, someone also planted an idea in my head about X, Y, Z. Like, how do I go about doing that now? I think what I would take away from our conversation so far is, one, listening to that insight, that nudge, that gut feeling. Two is doing the research, that initial research that you shared with us. And then, so you have an idea, okay, I want to do BSAP, I want to do the butchel thing. Like, what were some of the initial steps that you took to go from idea to execution?
Yeah, so the challenges are plenty. we're still going through a few now. So, right. So the first thing was, okay, what is the product I'm bringing to market? How is it going to be differentiated? Because again, BSAP is not new. We actually have it in our community. So you're not doing anything that is new. It's just that probably you don't see, well, now things have changed. You probably will be able to pick up some version of it in Whole Foods or whatever. But at that time, and even now, even if it's in Whole Foods or Target, it is not like Pure Leaf where you see it at every turn, right? Or in your local bodega. And I think that is the idea that those of us doing this would like, right? So that it's more pervasive, it's part of day to day. So that's one of the things in terms of how was I going to differentiate myself? How was I actually going to produce this? What was the production process going to be like? So number one, the way I wanted to differentiate myself was, it would be BSAP. It would, of course, be packaged. But again, what makes it different? I realized that, you know, traditionally, we add a lot of stuff. And listen, that's the beauty of this product. You can go anywhere with it. Mm-hmm. You can add extracts, you can add juices. Once you have your base, there's no telling what you can do with it. Mint, whatever the case may be. But I just wanted something simple, something that brought out the flavors, and then something that was especially low caloric, not void of calories or void of sugar, but much reduced than we were actually seeing. Either on the market or in our communities.
Yeah.
Right. So that was one of my biggest challenges. tempering it, because Bisap as it is like cranberry, you know, when you think
it can be,
cranberry, exactly. So what were the flavors that would bring it out? It, you know, and Rizal has a lot of character too. Mm-hmm. So to be able to balance the sugar and balance the mint and the ginger and the lemon and blah, 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 I had to go through a lot of, you know, formulations, you know, and my best time was for what it's worth, 2 a.m. when everything is quiet.
Oh, wow.
1 a.m. 2 a.m. when everything is quiet, when nobody's going to pop in and see what's for dinner or I'm hungry. That's when I did it. Around that time, it was quiet. I'll mix it up. I'll see what works. You have to put it together, because when you get to the co-packer session, they ask for a schedule of process, which is a scheduled process, I'm sorry, which is how do you prepare it and at what temperatures? So that was another thing. I was preparing it and just doing the amounts, but I didn't even think about the temperature of the water, how long I was boiling it for. So I had to do all of that. And then I think one of the challenges was finding a co-packer. So as I did them, I went through a lot of bottles. I started with plastic, and I realized that at the temperature that I was bottling at, the bottles were actually melting, or they felt soft.
Yeah. Right?
So that's also a hazard, because you want to think, if I'm thinking moderately healthy, you know, you don't want things seeping into the product. You want best production, high quality production methods. Then the other alternative was, okay, cold brew, if you will, right? Because that's another way to do it. Instead of actually boiling the tea leaves, or I'm sorry, the Rizal leaves, you can actually infuse them for a while, let them sit. But there's the additional step of sterilization, where I learned that you have to go to a different, sometimes the co-packer doesn't do it, and you have to go to a different plant to do that. So that's another money and time, right?
Yeah.
And then there was also, at that time, now I remember, there was also doing it from a commercial kitchen. I also ended up scratching that out, because at that time, I don't know how they are now, but commercial kitchens were expensive from my perspective.
Yeah.
And you don't have, the way I see it, you don't have that added supply or distribution process, right? Fulfillment and distribution. So it was literally you make it, and the overnight sessions were the cheaper ones for me. And at that time, just getting a little personal, I was on my way to being a newly minted single mother, right? So leaving at night just to do this and come back and then go back to your 9 to 5, that just wasn't going to jive with me.
Yeah.
And then I also wanted a business where if I'm not there, it could run.
Yes.
So these were all the things that are going through your mind at one time. So taking it step by step, the product. I said, okay, let's find a way to make the product. And what packaging will be best for the product? So you can go plastic, you can go can, you can go bottle. There's so many pros and cons to everything. Plastic is lighter at the end of the day for transportation, and I think can too.
Glass is heavy. I actually never thought about that.
Exactly. Glass is a lot more heavier. So when you're thinking about shipping, you also want to think about the cost too, because it goes with weight.
Yeah.
But then again, I told you some of this was inspired by my daughters. So they go, well, you know, are you thinking about sustainable methods? I'm like, to leave me alone. Are you thinking about sustainable methods? And, you know, maybe glass might be better, even though it's heavier in terms of, and I can really go into this in terms of, you know, if you go can, right, the impact to the environment is really at the beginning stages where you're extracting the bauxite. But then after that, you're okay. If you go glass, the recycling method is much more expensive at that time, not necessarily making it, at least from my research, right?
Yeah.
But I eventually settled on glass because there's so many ways to reuse that bottle after
you. Yeah, I was just going to say, like, your bottles are so beautiful that I can see so many ways of using it.
Exactly. And if you look at my Instagram, I had a bottle art featured recently, right? So if you're art and crafts, you can actually make some bottle art from that. You know, I have my Bisa bottles right now, hold my brushes in my kitchen. kitchen.
Oh, nice.
They can be pen holders. You know, you can actually recycle them also. If you don't want to do, you can do other things. So eventually, that's how I settled in. But when it comes to production, it helped instead in terms of sterilization and staying true to the method of production. So the most common and popular way is really to boil the leaves. Mm. And that was another struggle that I had with finding a co-packer who would do that. And once you boil the leaves and packaging, it sterilizes it. So as soon as you're done and you bottle it and you close it, that's it. You lock it in, right? Because you have, and then it goes through the cooling process and then you're done. And then it's shelf stable for like 18 months.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Right. Yeah. But if I did plastic, I'll have to find a way to cool it down, which I think exposes it or not. I think pathogens. Then now you have to actually sterilize it in a different way. So these are some of the things that I'm thinking about. It's a trade-off. And eventually it comes down to you, the entrepreneur, and what you want to do. I don't think there's a right or wrong way. Mm-hmm. I just think there's the best way for you with the resources you have and your vision.
Yeah. And speaking of resources, one of the big things that sort of hinders people from doing it, and I will say almost everyone I've spoken to who's on this podcast, most people are doing this on the side. They're balancing a full-time job in addition to their food venture. And so for you, like you kind of alluded to earlier, you're also balancing a full-time job, family life with running this business. But then how do you fund this? How do you think about funding? What are some of the sources of capital that you've either used, researched, and if you're able to share the pros and cons of some of the paths that you went down when it came to funding?
Yeah, so it's very simple, bootstrapping. Right. And this has been from my 9-to-5 pocket. Mm-hmm. Eventually, somewhere along the line, I'll probably borrow from a friend or family member, and then you still have to pay it back.
Right.
I will say that I have won a grant to be able to help with the production and marketing. So it was from the Queens Business Development Center, where they hold pitch competitions on in different categories. So I won in one of the years, in I think 2019, I won the food beverage category. So if anybody's listening, it is run by the New York Public Libraries.
Yeah, so I was going to say, just because we have a global audience, for the UK people, we're not talking about the Queen.
Exactly. Okay.
New York.
Yeah. So this is, it's run by the New York Public Libraries. The Brooklyn Library has theirs, Manhattan, the Bronx, and then Queens. So, and they partner with, you know, these economic development centers to help local businesses. So that's how I got that $10,000 grant. That helped. But 90% of this has actually been from my pocket, which has made the situation or my process very slow. But I'm not rushing it, because as I go, I'm learning a lot more. And when I'm ready, I would have had so many lessons learned. Mm-hmm. The food and beverage business, or the beverage business, is a very high barrier entry business. If you don't have the money, I would say that try and get some money. Maybe startup would be to avoid stress, just to be okay. Maybe your startup would be at the very minimum 25,000. You'll be okay with 50,000. Because what it is you go through a process where you're not even realizing. You do your taxes and like, wait, where did I find the money to do this? Because you're putting your costs together. You're like, wait, I actually had money to do this? You know, it adds up, right? Yeah. So you do a sample. It doesn't work. You throw it out. Or boxes, design. You know, you go through all these different iterations, and it all costs money.
Yeah.
Right. Because as you're going, your light bulbs are also going off in your head. Okay, this didn't work. Okay, can we try this way? And then you realize you tried this way, you can do it another way. And if you're obsessive and, you know, what is it? An analysis paralysis, you can go on a never ending journey, but eventually you have to stop somewhere.
Yeah.
So to me, that's very high. So I think that might bring us to the issue of the co-packer. Again, I said I wanted a business where somebody puts in an order, I send it to the fulfillment center. This person needs 8 cases, send it to them. The way I was thinking about my business was it wasn't going to be me delivering from home, right, which is good, which is what some people do. But you just have to know yourself and know your situation. Again, there's no right or wrong. There's just what's best for you. Exactly. So for me, that's how I wanted to run it, in terms of the order comes in, it goes to the co-packer or fulfillment center, it goes out to whoever it goes to. We all have, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, just for, you know, we've had a few entrepreneurs come on and talk about co-packers, and it just clicked for me that maybe people don't even understand what that concept is of who a co-packer is, because now you're talking about shipping and fulfillment. So maybe if we take a step back and just explain the role of the co-packer in the...
Right. So the co-packer is basically a facility that helps you create your product on a commercial scale or mass produce your product. In a nutshell, that's what it is. They have a lot of rules and regulations that you have had to adhere to. And both of you and the co-packer will have to also share your vision with your product in terms of production. So you have to find a co-packer or that facility who's willing to, number one, make your product, number two, make it at the quantities that you want to make it. And the reason is that some of these co-packers also have to make money. They charge you, of course, for their services, but they also need a minimum amount of order to make it worth their while. So for some co-packers, which is some of the challenges for some of us, is they would ask for, you have to make 10,000 bottles at a time, right?
Oh, wow.
Because they would charge you for storage. They would charge you for shipping. And there's a way to that, like the shipping, I don't use my co-packer. I actually make my shipping through Shopify because it's much cheaper because of the volume, it goes down. Yeah. But if the co-packer ships for you, there's a markup, right? So for storage, they're storing the ingredients, they're storing your bottles, they're storing everything.
Oh, that's right. I didn't even think about it. Yeah, they have your ingredients.
Right, so they have everything. So you also have to go through the process of the NDA. They have to make sure that everything is confidential. Mm. You also have to agree that there would be other vendors, or I'm sorry, clients of theirs that would probably make the same thing as you, but yours is unique and you have your terms. Exactly. So you have a vendor agreement as to, and even things in those terms are like, if there's ever a recall, whose fault is it? Is it your fault as a result of the production? Is it their fault? So let's say I use glass bottles and then a customer has a glass, for some reason there's a glass in there, who's going to help? Or if there's a biological hazard or something, are they going to help you? Who's suing and you're sued? Who's going to what? You know, so it's easy, but there are lots of nuances to that. And you only start this conversation when you agree that you're actually going to go with your minimum order quantities. Mm. Now, here you are, you don't even have proof of concept.
Right.
So why am I going to do 10? What if I do 10,000 quantities and that it doesn't sell? Because that's a reality. Right? Because now you have to find a way to market these 10,000 bottles. So that's one thing that I had to go through with the co-packers in terms of who was ready to make small quantities. So let's say just 5,000 or maybe 2,500 as our sample. And then if things go well, you know, we can increase from there. Then there's also the co-packer who has to agree to your methods of production. Mm-hmm. As in for me, I insisted we're going to do this as close as possible. We make it in our homes. So what I want is I want the Rozelle leaves, the mint leaves, and whatever it is that goes into the tea bag, into commercial tea bags, and we're going to use commercial kettles, right?
Oh.
Dip it in like you would make, or boil it in like you would as you're making it. That was like pulling hair through your nose, like finding one, because everybody's like, why don't you use a syrup? Why don't you use a powder? Why are we doing this? Wait, like we're actually going to boil like 50-gallon kettles, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and at some point you start doubting yourself, like, you know, maybe you're not thinking about this the right way. So eventually I settled on a co-packer who was willing to do this. And I think they work with a lot of very, starting entrepreneurs. So they understand the challenges. So, you know, we got the tea bags, the commercial tea bags, like 25-gallon tea bags where we'll put the roselle in, etc. We got the ginger, everything, and we make it as much as close as possible as you make it at home. So now I forget the question, but that is, the challenges that you go through, finding one that is willing to go with your products in terms of quantities, in terms of what you need to use. So now an example is, I've been flirting with the idea of maybe using a can, right? This is just ideation. It is just idea right now, nothing towards implementation.
Right.
But then this Coke packer doesn't do that, right? This Coke packer I'm using doesn't do that. If we're going to do that, and I was also thinking, maybe we could also, and I know I'm throwing ideas out there, but it's okay. Like maybe a carbonated version, right?
Ooh, that would be fun.
Exactly. Thinking about it, they're like, oh, now we have to go get another person who would bring the truck over, and then we'll have carbonate it, and then they will go away, and then we can, then they would can it. And it was, exactly. So can it be done elsewhere? It can. Do you have the money to do elsewhere? Now that's where the real question is. Exactly. So you think about all this, and then you go and pause a little. You're like, okay, you know what? Let me just stick to these bottles and see where things go. Yeah. And then we'll go from there. So in terms of that, that's where I was, that's a big challenge. Finding a co-packer who will make it. And then after it's done, they're going to store it. And then you have to come up with a system of how you're going to be fulfilling and how you're going to go, put this to market, et cetera. Right. And it all comes at a cost. So you have monthly bills, because you have monthly storage bills, right? So you have monthly bills in terms of what you're storing with them. You have monthly bills in terms of handling. So it won't be shipping for me, it would be handling. So they'll charge you on that. And anything else that you ask them outside of, their normal things that you may want them to do, they have to get, they will have to charge you for that as well. So it really boils down to money. And it's not favorable if you're bootstrapping. Yeah. And we can talk about funding, but you're in the friends and family funding for a long time, unless you have like real resources. Like you're actually in the bootstrap stage for a while, then you go to the friends and family to prove yourself before you even think about other things that you do. At least that's how I think about it. Because anybody giving you money wants to see the potential. They want to see how sales are going. They want to see how things are going, unless they really believe in you. And I've had people who believed in me that like that and given me money, but I'm still not even up to scale as to where it was, I want it to be exactly. Yeah. So really it's bootstrapping. And you have to have the money for it. It's a very high entry when it comes to capital needs.
Yeah, that's all really insightful, but then I think it's helpful for people as they're thinking through it, and then also when they see your product on Instagram or anywhere else, like understanding the literal sweat and tears
that
goes into like it landing in your whether it's shipped to you or landing on a shelf somewhere in your area. One thing I'm kind of going veering off topic a little, but I wanted us to touch on that. We didn't get to touch on it earlier. It's around the health benefits, right? Of the tea. Because we touched a little bit on how you wanted to make sure that it was low caloric, there were no preservatives and what have you. And then in terms of the additional ingredients, I think you've been very thoughtful about what to include and what each additional ingredient adds to the full formulation, if you will. And one of the things I will encourage, as we're running out of time here, one of the things I would encourage people that are listening to go to Boswa's Instagram account, where she has, Afua has on Boswa's Instagram account, a Rouge 101 series, which I really like, that goes into details on each of the ingredients and how that adds to the entire formula of the tea. So, but if you want to talk generally high level of the health benefits of, I guess, the formulation maybe as in total, like
based on what's all included in the team?
Right. So a lot of it basically comes from the Rizulti itself. What it's mostly known for is its high vitamin C content. It has phenol, so it has a lot of antioxidants. And then another thing that is purported is that it reduces high blood pressure, right? And there are lots of other health benefits. But in a way, there's very little research, but these are the prevalent ones, right? Mm-hmm. High vitamin C content, high in antioxidants, and then, of course, the reduction of high blood pressure. Mm-hmm. So then in terms of thinking about the other ingredients that I added, ginger, of course, is anti-inflammatory. Yeah. And so is, because of antioxidants in Rizulti, it's also anti-inflammatory. So overall, it has a lot of very good health benefits. Mm-hmm. Even the mint that I put into, right? There are also health benefits for that. Vanilla, I use very pure Madagascar vanilla, which has trace elements of vitamin B, A, D in there. So there may not be a lot, but of course, as you consume it, it adds to it, exactly. And then of course, there's lemon, which actually acts as the natural preservative. And that's also high in vitamins.
Oh, I see, because I was wondering how it tastes. Okay, so lemon is what does it in terms of...
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So number one, it's acidic. Rizulti itself has an acidic content, so that helps preserve it. So when you add the lemon to it, it adds an additional layer of preservative. Right. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, like I said, once we bottle it and we seal it, then that also seals in, mm-hmm. you know, the product and takes out any pathogen, et cetera. So the way we do it actually is you seal it and then you turn it up, down, and then the heat kills any bacteria and you're done.
Oh, nice. Wow.
You know, that's how. Yes. Yeah. So maybe one day I'll do a behind the scenes video.
I think that would be interesting. Like even just listening, you know, through this hour, I learned so much. Like it's fascinating to me. So.
Yes. So when it goes to the production line, you fill it up. It's filled very hot, right? It's a hot, they call it hot fill. So it's filled very hot. And then as soon as you seal it, then you have to turn it up, down, so that, you know, whatever got into it as in the sealing process, it's killed. And then it goes through a cooler. So you cool it then, and then the labels go on it, and then you have your product. But back to the health benefits. It helps with blood circulation, but I think the biggest thing is the phenols that is existent in the Rizulti itself and the high antioxidant level. Yes.
Nice. Cool. So as we wrap up here, I wanted to chat on like when you think about, and you kind of touched on it a little bit throughout the conversation, but when you think about your vision for Boswell, like let's put a time frame on it in the next 5 years, for example. What do you see? What's the vision for Boswell? What do you see yourself doing with the product? Other products potentially, like what's?
So the vision is really to add a lot more flavors. So my vision is not necessarily to add a different flavor of what I have with the red, with the rouge right now, but it's to add different types of teas. So if you get a case of a Boswell product, it should have the different type of teas from the continent. Ultimately, that's the vision.
Okay, cool.
And hopefully I should be able to achieve that in the next 5 years.
Nice.
And I hope to be pervasive in many stores, not only the big departmental stores, but I want it to be in such a way that, you know, you can, as you pick up an Arizona and you pick up a Pure Leaf or you pick up like a Snapple, Boswell would be there. Some form of flavor would also be there for you to pick up with your sandwich at the deli or at lunch, etc., in cafeteria. So that's what I'm thinking about right now for in terms of vision.
Nice. And it's really interesting that I was, well, you know this, yesterday I was I was in one of our ethnic stores. And I remember when I was picking up my stuff, I was like, and because I had been chatting with you, was on my mind, but I was like, it would be interesting if we had like Boswell or like, you know, whatever else products that I tend to chat with people on in these stores. Cause I see them also. And I'm sure there's a whole other conversation about getting into those stores and how that all works. But like that That sort of popped in my mind yesterday as I was shopping. But anyway, I don't want to digress. Before we transition to the rapid fire segment, can you let people know where they can find you online, social media, if they wanted to buy Boso? What are the opportunities for doing
that? Right now, I'm still in just one store, and I'd like to keep it that way a little bit because I'm still doing market research in terms of the feedback that I'm getting. How the product waxes and wanes, you know, exactly in terms of season, in terms of, you know, if there's a sale, how people react to it, if there's no sale, how people react to it, etc. So if you're in Manhattan and you happen to be on the west side, I'm in the Westerly Natural Market, right in front of the store to your left. On those shelves.
Very specific for those. Yes.
because the bottles are small.
Yeah.
So if you don't take care, you might miss it. Yeah. And you know, you might not see it. But that's where I am, unless they've moved it after this conversation. But you can definitely ask. And they're you know, they're different. It's a natural market too. So they're different segments of how they actually design their product. So that's where I am. And then of course you can find us online on bosofoods.com. And on Instagram at Boso Foods. Okay. So the Instagram is mostly for the educational part of it, what the product does, how we're actually exploring with the product. Because, you know, last summer I tried to do cocktails from it, you know, popsicles from it, you know, so some ideas of just not it being a tea, but, you know, we can make it into different things because why not, right? So Instagram, yeah, so Instagram would give some ideas on that. And I'm hoping to also beef up that in terms of content. But basically, these are the three places that you would find. And hopefully, you can find us in stores in a few months to come.
Yes, thank you. And I will share the links and tag you on social media, all that, when this episode comes out so people can click on it directly and get to find you. Okay, so we're going to wrap up with these rapid fire questions. If you're familiar with them, it's just quick responses, first thought that comes to your mind. I won't dive into the reasoning for your responses. We're just going to take it at face value. Okay. First question. Would you rather lose your sense of smell or taste?
Smell. I would like to taste, yeah.
And then next question. Would you rather have, I feel like I know the answer to this, but would you rather have more money or more free time?
Wow. Why do we have to choose?
That's the point.
More money, because the money will give me the free time.
Nice. Okay. Are you a, and I'm asking this because you said you mentioned your 2 a.m. recipe night switches, but are you a morning person or a night person?
Morning person.
And then what is one ingredient you can't live without?
Pepe.
Spoken like a true Ghanaian. Awesome. Well, on that happy note, we're going to wrap up this conversation. Thank you so much for making the time to chat with us today. I'm in awe of your story and, like, obviously, well, maybe not obviously, but I know you off of you know, this podcast, this platform, and just I know how much thought, how much time you're pouring into this, and I'm hoping sharing your story will inspire the people, and we'll be following your story, lifting you up, and hopefully 5 years from now, maybe even sooner, we will see you in more places around the US and globally, if you would like.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been my pleasure. It's my first podcast ever, as I told you. So I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes too. And thank you so much for doing this. Like I told you, I know we didn't talk about it that much, but like I said, this is very important for the generation after us, you know, trying to teach them what is traditional versus what we're actually modifying to suit our lifestyle now, where we find ourselves, right? Because things have changed. We're not necessarily growing up the way we were brought up. And it's important to also hold on to some values and some methods. So this is really valuable. I find it very valuable. And I shared that personal story with you as to how my daughters are now very curious about back home. And so listening to these stories and how people are coming up with food stories and being inspired by their mothers or their communities is very important. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Ifo. I appreciate that.
Item 13 is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.